On a Monday, it is a State Capitol Report on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. In 2018, in the wake of the Parkland, Florida school shooting that killed 17 people, then-Governor Scott Walker signed a $100 million school safety plan in March of that year that included creating an Office of School Safety to administer grants and help schools with their safety plans.
Looking at making sure that no child, no student, no teacher, no parent should ever have to be afraid of being threatened.
Archive, courtesy of Wisconsin Eye, join in with questions for the Office of School Safety. 4 years later, 800-642-1234. Trish Kilpin is executive director of the Office of School Safety, which is under the Wisconsin Department of Justice. She's been in the role since January. Trish, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, let's take stock for a moment. 4 years after the Office of School Safety was created, are Wisconsin schools safer than before there was an office?
Well, that's a really good question. I believe that Wisconsin schools are better prepared. That $100 million grant that you mentioned, those incredible funds, not only provided grants to schools for school safety improvements, but we were really able to leverage the dissemination of those grants by helping schools to engage in best practice school safety activities, actions, and trainings when they receive those grants. So we were able to provide them with things like threat assessment training, youth mental health first aid, psychological first aid, many different opportunities to expand their understanding of what would keep a school safe. In addition, we had created a threat assessment tool and were able to teach that to grantees. We taught threat assessment strategies, techniques, and how to use the protocol to over 5,000 Wisconsin school or law enforcement partners.
So what I'm hearing is that these grants have really helped on a number of fronts concerning school safety.
Absolutely.
What are the state requirements for schools in regards to safety? Are there any types of requirements that schools must do?
So Act 143, besides creating our office, did stipulate that schools have to submit 5 documents annually. And the documents really shape what helps them to ensure that they're engaging in school safety work regularly. So when you look at what those are, the first thing is we would like them to submit to us and to local law enforcement partners maps and blueprints of their building. Mm-hmm. And interestingly and timely, the Wisconsin legislature just approved Act 109, which will provide an additional $2 million to really improve maps, to make them accessible in a digital format so that people can have a more efficient response when a crisis occurs.
Mobile-friendly type maps. Uh-huh.
Exactly. If you almost can picture like Battleship, where, you know, there would have be the map would have a grid. And in an example that I had seen when we were looking at this, it also could like pinpoint and ping exactly where an incident is occurring so that if the emergency responders are having to respond to a medical event, let's say outside the pool, they know exactly where that is, what entrance is closest. So maps is one of the requirements that school districts are submitting to us and to their law enforcement partners. We also ask schools to submit their school safety plans. And that's really their emergency operation plans to identify threats and hazards. These plans are best created in partnership with community law enforcement partners, emergency responders. They're customized for each building, not just a template in a model practice. Hmm. And they consider hazards and threats beyond the inside of a school building during the school day. So they may include things like what to do if something happens after school at a sporting event. Another requirement is that they submit documentation that they've had school safety assessments done. And those safety assessments, again, are best done in collaboration with law enforcement partners. And those safety assessments are really looking at whether or not a school is in compliance with what they need to do in terms of American Disability Act and considering the needs of the building, considering how would a vehicle access the building? How would it work if we lock this door? I mean, just really practical things, walking through and ensuring that that schools are ready. And then the final two requirements have to do with safety training and drills, that we want schools to be regularly practicing safety trainings. That that could include a variety of things, including drills, school safety drills. And then our we are asking that school boards or governing bodies of our schools review those drills and what happened during that drill before they're submitted, so that there's a clear understanding of what the work that's happening in our schools.
I'm going to just take a moment to reintroduce you as we talk about how to keep schools safe in Wisconsin with the State Office of School Safety under the Department of Justice, talking with Trish Kilpin, Executive Director appointed by the DOJ in January. You can join in with your questions about school safety and what happens here in Wisconsin, 800-642-1234. Trish, and this might fall under school safety assessments, but last week there were shifting reports on how the Uvalde gunman entered the school. And the initial reports talked about a teacher propping open a back door. The teacher's attorney then clarified that she had closed the door, assumed the door would lock when she did that, and the door did not. What are protocols around locked doors in Wisconsin schools?
We know that having locked exterior doors keeps people safe. We would like schools to keep those doors locked on the exterior. The safety assessment that I described actually would be walking through the building and checking those doors to make sure that they locked when you think they're going to, and making sure that all of our schools have that nothing has prevented that their best plan from being engaged. Like, there's something preventing that door from locking. Did some student put a piece of paper in there to make sure that it didn't lock, or whatever it might be?
So basically, your office has a recommendation that doors lock, but it is not part of any type of mandatory protocol.
Right. There's nothing legally requiring schools to do that, but we do provide best practice guidance, which would include locked doors.
Let's talk about the tip line. Your office launched the Speak Up, Speak Out confidential tip line in 2020. It's fielded thousands of tips, I think more than 3,600, vast majority not about planned school attacks, 51 tips there. And feel free to update my numbers. But what impact has the tip line had?
Well, I appreciate you saying that. Feel free to update my numbers, because I think it's important for everyone to realize this is a continuous process. We receive tips daily. We run that 24/7 call center. And while the importance of the tips, like preventing planned school attacks, cannot be underappreciated, equally important are the tips that come in saying that someone needs help or assistance. We know that when violent acts occur, that they typically occur after after many signs of concern for an individual. And so the tips that come to us telling us that a student is thinking about suicide, that a student is struggling with depression, that they're experiencing child abuse, all of those are points where we can, you know, get people the information they need, meaning school, law enforcement, families, so that kids get the help they need and deserve, and we get kids off that pathway to violence. I think our anonymous reporting line, SUSO, which is Speak Up, Speak Out Wisconsin, and people can access it at speakup.widoj.gov, is an incredibly powerful tool. And it's also an anonymous site. You don't have to give your name as a tipster or a reporter unless you want to.
Who answers the tip line? Where does it filter through?
So we have a resource center, and it's staffed 24 hours a day by our very small team. And people are answering in real time. So as soon as a tip is submitted, someone, it could be on the phone. You could also call 1-800-SUSO1. And they're that phone is answered by someone that can help. Otherwise, our resource center analysts do an incredible job of dialoguing with the tip online, getting the tips to the appropriate people so that help can be obtained.
So you would say there are well over 3,600 so far since the line was created. Have you seen an upward number, or has it pretty much been stable as you look at the numbers?
They continue to increase. And, you know, when a school violent event happens, like what happened in Texas, we do see an increase in needs for schools, for community members. Maybe they've been concerned that an individual could pose violence, but they haven't reported that to anyone. And they change their mind and they see that it's important. So we've had an increase in tips recently. And we see every tip as an opportunity to respond and intervene.
Trish Kilpin with us leads the Office of School Safety. As we look at the work of this office housed within the State Justice Department, tasked with making sure schools are keeping up with safety as a priority, it runs, as we've been talking about, the Speak Up, Speak Out Resource Center. Join in on school safety, what you want this office to pay attention to, questions about the work, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute for more State Cap with Trish Kilpin here on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're getting briefed on the Office of School Safety that is housed in the State Department of Justice, created in 2018, focused on multiple things, as we've been learning: threat reporting, critical incident response, threat assessments, general school safety guidance. Join in. Maybe your child has discussed school violence drills, how they've been carried out. Your questions on how tips are investigated, 800-642-1234. Trish Kilpin is Executive Director of the Office of School Safety, former school social worker with over 30 years in the Greendale School District, and she's with us for about eight more minutes. Let's bring on a caller now. Rich is with us from Rhinelander. Chai, go ahead.
Hi. As usual, you and your guest and Wisconsin Public Radio are excellent. That is not a vain comment on my part. However, I think we've got this backwards. I'm sitting here thinking about Uvalde, and I'm thinking every classroom probably should be equipped with an underground shelter as a tornado shelter, where the children who are being assaulted in their places of study can seek refuge. I am a very old man, though. I attended K-12 in Oneida County for 12 years of education. At no time was I asked to hide under my desk or to learn to seek a place of safety from a gunman during all those years. I think your guest is excellent. I think you are excellent. I think we've got this backwards.
Rich, thank you for the call. You know, Trish, what comes up for you as you hear Rich say that it is a totally different world now?
I think it's intensely painful for all of us to think about children suffering, to know that the reality is that they have to be prepared for events. The thing that comes to mind, I guess, for me, are actually two things. One is that we need to make sure that our drills and practices for these types of events do no harm to kids, that we like to promote an approach that we call no drama, no trauma, so that kids are practicing in a way that doesn't include sensorial things that, like sounds of violence, those type of things. But we also need to ensure that we're engaging in school safety work that's very comprehensive. We know that not one intervention is going to be sufficient. So we need to make sure that we're promoting both physical and psychological safety, that we're simultaneously working on prevention, protection, which is what Rich is talking about, mitigation, and then our recovery and our response. And so it's a powerful and an enormous responsibility. We have to do our very best to make sure that we're engaging in prevention work so that these events never occur.
You talk about balancing between preparing for a crisis like this and not traumatizing students. What are best practices then for schools as they consider, you know, when putting on a drill like this and when finding a violence drill program that really works?
Well, schools have many choices that they can make. And I believe that schools take careful consideration in order to select things that are right for their building and their school. But there's a couple things to remember. One is that a basic part of almost all school safety drills would include the lockdown. And what a lockdown is for those who might not know, is we're talking about locking the door to secure the space, moving students out of sight, and requiring students to remain quiet. Essential to this is we also are teaching kids that they just always have to follow the adult's directions, that if the teacher does something, it's to keep you safe. Now, we know that practicing and increasing that automaticity so people know what to do in an event is critically important. We also know that people can learn what they need to learn about how to anticipate keeping themselves safe from things that aren't actual what people think of as drills of coming in and locking a door and those types of things. Tabletop activities, discussions, what we call for little kids when-then drills. If this happened, what would we do then? If that happened, what would we do then? So we know that there are many ways to increase safety with practicing these drills. They need to start at that lower level where you're starting to orient people to what the drills are, that you're practicing with tabletops, that you're actually discussing things, making that part of the conversation, and always calling them safety drills, not calling them scarier names. And this is what is done to keep you safe. There's also options-based drills, which people then in those types of drills choose the best course of action. That's important too. So that if you, let's say there's a unwelcome dog in the building and we don't know if that dog is safe. And we know that classrooms right around that dog's location might have to make a different decision than a classroom that's far away from from the location. So we have to make decisions based on our surroundings, what we know, the information we have, and how to keep ourselves safe.
Trish Kilpin, Executive Director of the Office of School Safety here in Wisconsin. Trish, I want to touch on what's happening in the U.S. Senate because it could absolutely have implications on what happens at our state capitol. And key senators said Sunday, you know, on the Sunday news shows, there is growing momentum to toughen federal gun laws. And the bipartisan negotiator, Senator Chris Murphy, said that this package may include some school safety money. What are you watching for from the federal government in terms of boosting school safety?
I am watching to ensure that the conversations continue to occur and that the funds materialize so that we can continue this work. I'll also add that here in Wisconsin, we are so incredibly happy with that $100 million grants to schools that created our office. But most of our projects that we're running now are critically important and they're funded by grants. The Act 143 created the office and one position that was mine. So we're hopeful that we're able to partner with our state legislators to provide some permanency of funding. Because as you can well imagine, the demand for our services continues to increase. And it's important that we have the adequate resources to meet that increased demand long term and develop a strategic plan that we can actualize.
So I understand that the money is running out, that there's only about $6 million left of the funding. Is that right?
There's actually less than that. So there's less than $2 million that we're still actualizing in terms of creating a program for. Some of those other monies are designated and allocated for projects like critical incident grant stabilization, things of that nature. We have a couple more projects we'd like to get to. We have a very small team, and we'd like to be able to have that stable, predictable funding so that we can make plans to get these final projects done.
Trish, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me, and thank you for caring about keeping our Wisconsin kids safe.
Trish Kilpin is Executive Director of the Office of School Safety. It is under the Wisconsin Department of Justice. The Speak Up, Speak Out confidential tip line, that number is 800-697-8761. That's 800-MY-SUSO1. We have a link at WPR.org/mornings. Ahead on the State Capitol Report, we hear from a Whitefish Bay representative, Deb Andraka, elected in 2020, about what's changed, what hasn't in the debate surrounding firearms. News update is next. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. Now to gun-related legislation and how Assembly lawmakers will campaign on this issue in their districts following mass shootings around our country. Here's Governor Evers after the massacre at Robb Elementary in Uvalde, Texas.
I still refuse to believe that when our kids are murdered in their desk at school, that there is any party line that's not worth crossing.
Courtesy PBS Wisconsin's Here and Now. Join in on the policy debate. What you want to hear from lawmakers ahead of the November election? What about red flag laws? What about background checks? 800-642-1234. Democratic Representative Deb Andraka of Whitefish Bay. Her district runs along Lake Michigan in the Milwaukee North Shore suburbs, including Bayside and Fox Point. She is running for a second term. Representative Andraka, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you, Kate. It's great to be here.
Since the Uvalde school massacre 13 days ago, have there been any conversations among your colleagues, among Assembly lawmakers, about what are next steps on gun laws in Wisconsin?
There have been conversations for years, Kate, about what to do about gun violence. After every mass shooting and after every time we have people who are killed by senseless gun violence. So this has been a conversation that hasn't just been since the most recent events. This has been ongoing for many, many years in our state.
Is there any more urgency, any more appetite among Assembly lawmakers to push forward firearms bills?
There has been an appetite, I believe, among a majority of Wisconsin voters. I have had many conversations with my colleagues since I was elected. I ran on a platform of a common sense gun reform. I'm a gun owner. I have my concealed carry permit. I have personally reached out to many legislators. It is difficult right now because the legislature is adjourned. We have had special sessions on gun issues in the past. So we are still waiting to see what will happen. It's all complicated by an election year. But I just want to emphasize that this isn't something that myself and my Democratic colleagues have just started on. This has been going on for many, many years. And it's been very frustrating that we can't get common sense gun laws like background checks on every gun sale and red flag laws, that we can't get those not only for up for a vote, but we can't even get a hearing in the Wisconsin state legislature.
You've seen the legislature firsthand, gavel in, gavel out. Why did you run for office?
Well, that was really a turning point for me. So before I was elected, I was a elementary school teacher. I was doing some substituting, and I was also working as a volunteer with a group called Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense. And during that special session, I was up in the gallery looking at the legislators and watching as they gaveled in and gaveled out in a matter of seconds on an issue that is killing Wisconsinites by gun suicide, by gun homicide, not just with mass shootings, but just about every single day. And I knew at that point that if I couldn't change my lawmakers' minds, I would have to change their job. I couldn't change the entire legislature, so I decided to take on my own state representative, with whom I have met to talk about common sense gun reform, and couldn't change his mind. So I have seen this happen before, but we just have to keep going. We have to keep fighting for what we know the Wisconsin public wants. And what they want is common sense gun reform that's going to keep Wisconsinites safe.
What has surprised you most going from an activist role to a lawmaker role?
well, there have been many surprises along the way, the landscape right now is very partisan, and it shouldn't be very partisan. I have spoken with Republicans behind closed doors who have expressed support for these kinds of laws. What we need is for the people who are in the middle, who are gun owners, who know that what we're talking about when we say background checks and red flag laws, it does not threaten any law-abiding gun owner. It does not threaten their Second Amendment rights. These are things that keep our community safe. And what I would really like to see our state do is to get back to a culture of responsible gun ownership and gun safety. For years, when I was growing up, school shootings weren't a thing. We didn't have to go through these drills that I had to go through with my students. Something has changed, and we need to get back to a place where we are responsible gun owners and we hold others accountable for their actions.
What does responsible gun ownership entail?
Well, the two proposals that my Democratic colleagues and I want to see move forward the most are background checks on all gun sales and red flag laws, also called extreme risk protection orders. Right now in Wisconsin, if you buy a gun at a licensed firearms dealer, which is the vast majority of gun purchases, then they will run a background check on you. However, if you buy a gun from a friend, if you buy a gun from an unlicensed gun sale that could be online, it could be at a garage sale. I have spoken with people who have reached out to me and said, there's a gun for sale at a garage sale. Is that legal? And the answer is yes in Wisconsin, because the only people who are required to run that background check are licensed firearms dealers. And this is how people can get their hands on guns who probably shouldn't have them if they have convictions, if they have a felony conviction, or if they are a domestic abuser. Everybody I talk to when I explain this law believes we need to make sure that every single gun sale has a background check. That's just common sense. And we can't even get a hearing on that bill with the current Republican leadership.
Along those lines, a question about semi-automatics. Should people younger than 21 be allowed to carry and use semi-automatic guns like an AR-15 in Wisconsin?
My opinion is no. The vast majority of Americans' opinion is no. And I think the evidence is clear that having younger people be able to access these assault style rifles is a terrible idea. I think that we need to get back to a place where we have restrictions on gun laws. We have seen bills in the Wisconsin state legislature just this year that would reduce the age for concealed carry to 18. 18-year-olds are in high school. 18-year-olds they can't buy alcohol. They can't buy cigarettes. They can't rent hotel rooms. There's lots of things that we prevent 18-year-olds from doing. And I think most people would agree that buying an assault-style weapon is probably one of them, should be one of them too.
I'm going to reintroduce you here as we talk about efforts at gun legislation with Representative Deb Andraca. She's a Democratic representative for the 23rd Assembly District along the Lake Michigan shoreline. You can join in 800-642-1234. Tom in New Berlin is with us. Tom, hi, go ahead. What would you like to bring up?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'd like to make aware how dangerous the rhetoric about common sense, this term common sense laws, common sense. It doesn't mean anything at all. Actually, go to the point. Don't fluff it up with common sense. And remember, semi-auto is the same as a double-action revolver. A five-shot revolver is not an assault weapon. So just keep that in mind. Thank you so much.
Tom, thank you for that call. A representative, you know, Tom would like to more specifics about not using word common sense, but really drilling down and being clear about what people are really saying.
Well, I don't know how much clearer I can be about background checks and red flag laws. So I think I described in detail what are the holes are in our current background check laws in the state of Wisconsin. When we're talking about the style of gun, yes, the assault style rifles typically also have the capacity to have high capacity magazines. And if you talk to hunters, if you talk with responsible gun owners, they will tell you there is really no reason to have these kinds of weapons. If you are looking at self-defense, you probably want a handgun. If you are going hunting, you probably need a hunting rifle. These are military grade weapons that probably belong in the military. So if I could be more specific, I'm happy to talk about the details, and I would be happy to talk about these kinds of details with my Republican colleagues in a public hearing on any of these bills.
Should ammunition magazines be limited? And then if so, to how many bullets?
There are an awful lot of proposals that Democrats have put forward, and Republicans, on ways that we can reduce gun violence. We have offered bills that would restrict high-capacity magazines. We have offered bills that would limit untraceable ghost guns, which is another way that people get around our current gun laws. We have offered red flag laws, background checks, making sure that your guns are stored safely. If you have a gun in the home, you should make sure that it is stored safely away from children. So there are lots of different things that we can do. I generally come back to the two that we promote the most, the background checks and the red flag laws, because these have the most evidence. These have the data, and they have the studies that show that these save lives. So we can get distracted about talking about styles of guns and other kinds of gun laws. But these are the two that most people would say can save the most lives in Wisconsin.
Stepping back for just a moment, as we watch the U.S. Senate debate gun legislation, and Connecticut Senator Chris Murphy, the lead Democratic negotiator, said yesterday he's more confident than ever that lawmakers will get something done. What are you watching for out of a federal package that could have implications on Wisconsin?
Well, if the federal government can pass background checks, and if they can pass a red flag law, that would be ideal, because it would apply to all different states. If say, for example, going back to the assault style rifle, if the state of Wisconsin was to ban that particular kind of gun, it wouldn't make as much of an impact if you can simply order one online, or you could just go across state lines and get that kind of gun, or high capacity magazines, or what you need to put together a ghost gun, if you could just go to another state and get them. So I really do hope that the federal government can pass some of these kinds of restrictions that we are talking about, because they would be more effective if you couldn't just go across state lines. Having every state have different levels of protection for gun safety is a problem. And that is one of the things that we saw with the Buffalo shooting, was that someone was able to go buy a gun in one state that had looser gun laws, cross over the state line and go to New York. So that's why having something passed at the federal level would be great.
Democratic Representative Deb Andraca of Whitefish Bay here on measures that she would support for gun legislation and the conversations in our assembly. Join in on the gun debate, what you think lawmakers should do next, what proposals you back. 800-642-1234. Back for more State Cap in a moment here on the Ideas Network. It is the State Capitol Report on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation with Democratic Representative Deb Andraca of Whitefish Bay. As all 99 seats in the State Assembly are up for election, we're exploring how the gun debate will take shape in light of the mass shootings that continue to rock our nation. Representative Andraca with us for about 9 more minutes. Let's bring in another caller, Dan in Albany. Dan, hi. What's on your mind?
Hi, good morning. My logic is this. Since the inventor of the AR said it's for military use only, then it's the manufacturers is why all these guns are in the public hands. I would suggest removing civil litigation protections for any murder created by an assault rifle. It doesn't hurt any responsible gun owners. They can still have them. But I predict that if you did that, it wouldn't be long before the gun manufacturers would be running buyback programs for the AR weapons. Thank you.
Dan, thank you for that call. Representative Andraka.
I think Dan has a great idea, and I think measures like that have been proposed. There's actually a bill in the legislature this session that took Wisconsin in the opposite direction, that would give gun manufacturers additional protections. So that's partly what's so difficult about the gun debate in the legislature. Republicans are trying to take Wisconsin in the direction of lowering the age to 18, not even having a process to get a concealed carry permit, that anyone can just buy a gun and carry concealed, really taking us in the opposite direction. So we're battling that. At the same time, we're trying to get gun laws passed that keep Wisconsinites safer.
Assembly Speaker Robin Voss has said the idea of arming teachers is on the table as a way to protect students. Do you think that's a good idea?
Absolutely not. I was a teacher, and I am a gun owner, and I have my concealed carry permit, and I have asked the speaker to reach out to me because I can tell him that I do not know another teacher who thinks that this is in any way a good idea. Teachers are there to teach. If you've ever been in a classroom with 28 to 30 kids, you know that is not a place that you want any kind of firearm. And we have seen over and over again these proposals to arm schools, to arm teachers, to have more security there. They really just serve to distract us from the problem, which is easy access to guns. It is easier in Wisconsin to buy a gun than it is to adopt a puppy. And when you stop and think about that, you realize that there are just, it is too easy to get a gun and to harm other people. So I would like to focus on measures that don't put the burden on teachers in the classroom who already have enough to do, and to put the burden on people who are using these weapons irresponsibly, and making sure that we are passing measures and talking about measures. And I'd like to say to Speaker Voss, holding public hearings on measures so that we keep Wisconsinites safe.
On the subject of teachers, schools, classrooms, the money to house an Office of School Safety in Wisconsin is running out. That was created after Parkland with $100 million from Governor Scott Walker. Then would you support the continuation of this office? And if so, how should it be funded?
I would support the continuation of school safety because I support just about any measure that would keep our schools safe. But when we're talking about putting the burden on schools and teachers to defend against gunmen, I think we have our priorities in the wrong place.
Let's take another call now. Daniel joining us from Madison. Daniel, hi. Go ahead.
Yes, the earlier caller who said he doesn't understand what a common sense legislation means, or that they should stop using the word common sense. When someone walks to a gun shop to buy a gun, and they just want to find out if the person has any criminal background or is capable of harming other people, isn't that common sense enough? Can people just understand like simple English? If someone does, who shouldn't own a gun, shouldn't own it? Or if someone puts a threat to himself or other people, guns should be taken from them. Isn't that common sense? Can people just get that straightforward?
Daniel, thank you for that call. And certainly, Representative Daniel, you know, behind a universal background check there. And as you said earlier, that there is polling that says that Wisconsinites would, you know, want these types of laws in place.
Yes, and I use the term common sense, and most people understand what that means, just like the last caller said. We don't want guns to get into the wrong hands, and we need ways to take guns away from people who might be a danger to themselves or others. So in addition to background checks on every gun sale, which I think most Wisconsinites support, I know every poll I see, at least 80% of Wisconsin voters support making sure that Wisconsin's law requires a background check on every gun sale. And they also support red flag laws, sometimes called extreme risk protection orders. These are in place in 19 other states. They've been found constitutional. They do not violate gun owners' Second Amendment rights. And they are a way that you can know that if someone is about to harm themselves in the for example, with a firearm suicide, or if they're exhibiting behaviors that say that they are going to harm others, there is a mechanism to make sure that guns are taken away before something happens. So these are two laws or two proposals that we would like to see become law in Wisconsin that I think most people can get behind and would agree with.
Talking with Representative Deb Andraka about the gridlock on gun control legislation in Wisconsin, you can join in 800-642-1234. Representative, I've heard you say a couple times here that you just want a public hearing, you just want a committee meeting to discuss these proposals. You know, when would you want that? How do you see that coming together?
I could see that coming together anytime. If the governor were to call a special session, I know that my Democratic colleagues and I are ready to get to work on this. We are unfortunately in campaign season, so that means that the likelihood of something happening is low, which is very sad because people are dying every single day from either firearm suicide or from gun violence all across the state. So I think that many of us would be very pleased to go back into session and get something done. I don't have the power to do that. And so I would hope that my Republican colleagues would not gavel in and gavel out if something were to happen. What I would like to see is some action as soon as possible. And the real tragedy is that something could have happened this past session. Something could have happened the session before that, and it hasn't.
We only have a few seconds left, but you're running for re-election. What are your thoughts on taking these gun proposals with you as you navigate campaign season, as you navigate fundraising and talk to voters about gun laws?
Well, I ran front and center on common sense gun laws. I ran front and center on making sure that we reduce gun violence. And there was a time where candidates couldn't run saying these kinds of things because the gun lobby had such power. And I encourage every candidate to talk to their voters honestly, and most importantly, listen to voters. We know that 80% of Wisconsinites want us to do something. They want us to pass bills that will make Wisconsinites safe. So it's something that should be a part, I believe, of most candidates' campaigns. And I hope that we can finally elect candidates who are on board with making sure that we take action, that we do something to make sure that Wisconsinites are safe.
Representative Andraka, thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Kate. It was great to be here.
Deb Andraka represents the 23rd Assembly District. She was elected to the Assembly in 2020. This is a State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent on the Ideas Network.